presenting Hilda Miros.
Joe Quijano, the singer, composer, musician, and bandleader known as the King of La Pachanga, passed away on April 4th, 2019, at the age of 83 in Puerto Rico, where he was born. This is a tribute to my friend Joe. Joe Quijano. And Joe, let me tell you, I know you're in Puerto Rico by the beach enjoying the wonderful, wonderful weather of that island. But I'm really very grateful that you're giving me an interview because you are an icon. You are a musical icon and you're my friend. And it's been a long time that we haven't spoken, but I know whatever you have to say is important, it's entertaining. And a lot of the younger people that will be listening will get a lot out of it. But listen, you send me the Tito Puente Roast DVD, and it's fascinating. And I'll read a little bit from it, and then you can go on. It says, the Tito Puente Roast presented by Joe Quijano. In 1979, I produced a live show for Tito Puente and his orchestra for the purpose of promoting him to a wider television audience. We came up with the idea of starting a Tito Puente scholarship fund and incorporating it into the Tito Puente Roast. That was a big, big deal, Joe, then, and it still is, because I know you made Tito happy and you made a lot of students, a lot of talented young people happier. How are you? Tell me about that, please.
I'm doing well, Hilda. I'm so glad to, after all these years, speak to you again and see that we're still in this business of music. I really appreciate your calling. And as far as the Tito Puente Roast that I produced, it was something out of the an idea of mine to do like a Dean Martin roast, which was very popular at the time.
Yeah.
And since I was 15 years old, being a messenger for a photography company called TransSus Corporation, we used to do rear backbound slides for TV, and I was the messenger I used to deliver to your show of shows, Ed Sullivan shows, the gamut of all the stuff I was using rear backbound projections. And I gained a lot of knowledge, you know, just by watching. Then years later, it became in handy because I was able to produce this show almost with my eyes closed, you know. And then we did it. There's a personality there like Mita Silva, Bobby Capó.
All the greats. You had all the greats. Wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, before that, before going on to whoever was there, and is, by the way, could this, is this DVD still available now? Yeah, could it be purchased?
This is available. There's a company in England. It's called International Records, and that could be gotten through the internet. Yes.
Okay. Also, I know a lot of your music is on the internet. It's in Amazon. It's all over. Because how many LPs did you record?
I did a total of about 25 LPs. I reduced them down to 15 CDs, and there's a total of almost 325 numbers.
And that's then, a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah, I recorded. I recorded with CBS back in the day, back in '60. I recorded with a company called Spanoramic. Then I did some stuff for RCA. And which one? Oh, MGM. I did The Fiddler on the Roof score, Goes Latin, scored by Jules Fox.
You did also one on strings, right? There were strings you did.
Yokiano strings, which Charles Fox also did. Charles Fox, by the way, is the composer of Killing Me Softly and Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Love Boat. He's a good
friend
of mine.
And also you had your own record company.
And then, I wandered off to, with that knowledge, to Sesta Records, which I named after my amateur days of playing highlight.
Go back, and it's interesting. I was reading your biography, and I know you're from the Bronx, but when I read that you were in around Southern Boulevard, Kelly Street, Simpson Street, that was my neighborhood. I was raised in the South Bronx. And it brought so many wonderful memories because you mentioned the Hunts Point Palace and the guys that used to play. You played there. Tell me a little bit about, I know you were born in Puerto Rico, like I was born in Puerto Rico, and your family came to New York. I know that. Tell me about you as a child and then what happened with you.
Well, when I was 6 years old, my family and I, that was 1941, we migrated to the Bronx. Again, you know, in those days, you used to go to the furnish room. The furnish room was the rooms that your relatives used to rent you to bring you over. And that was at 16 Simpson Street. I never forget that. And I went to PS20. That was on Simpson at 167th Street. Across the street from Fort Apache, famous Fort Apache police station.
Yes.
And then I went to from there I went to PS52. That was on Longwood Avenue and Kelly Street. And then from there I went to High School of Industrial Arts, where I wanted to be a commercial artist. And then by that time the music grabbed me with my good friends Orlando Marin and Charlie Palmieri, and
they were your buddies around the block, correct?
Right. We used to play stickball together.
I remember. Stickball, that's what we did. Now, how did you start playing about?
You know what happened was that my cousin, Carlos Cueva, on Simpson, used to play piano, and then I used to got the bug, and my parents bought me a piano, and I went to study piano with Eduvige Bocanegra and Maria Luisa Lecomte. Maria Luisa Lecomte was the mother of Luis Varona, which was one of the first pioneer piano players of what they call today salsa music, which is Latin music, which Machito was the band he used to play with. And I got the bug, you know, from watching him and stuff. But then I did about 3 years of studying, and I ventured off to doing vocals on the subway station of Hunts Point and going to Orchard Beach. And they saw nickels and dimes at me, so I made a pair of bongos with a couple of latas of juice, and I said, tuku-tuku-tango, tuku-tuku-tango, and drive people crazy. And that stayed with me till I became a pro.
Then you got together with Orlando Marin and Charlie Palmieri and organized the group. Is that the way it was? No?
Yes, Orlando was the leader. Orlando's still alive. He's still gigging, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he's a very nice person.
He's a nice person. I like him very much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And how did you get together with the guys to finally get a group performing?
Well, the thing was that we used to go to a PS52. And in 52, at lunchtime, we would go downstairs. There was a piano. And we would rehearse there. And we knew one song, El Cumbanchero.
De Rafael Hernández.
Yes. Okay. Right. And then we graduated, and we did Abanequito by Tito Puente, and then we did La Toalla that Tito Rodriguez was. As I said in our conversation so far, I've mentioned Machito, Puente, and Rodriguez. And
yes,
those were the people we used to look up to, because those were the
course
bands that were happening at the time.
Yes. And you practiced, and then you got your first job. What was it?
Yeah, first gig we played was at Hansway Palace, and it happened by this time that the piano player was the leader, and he paid us 35 cents for the gig, I'll never forget. But 35 cents back in 1948 was like a dollar, you know.
Oh yes, of course, of course. How big was your group? How many guys? And
we had five guys, and we didn't use a bass player because we didn't know, you know, where to hire a bass player. And like, you know, imagine a rhythm section without a bass. It just doesn't, you know, round out the sound. And we had Elmo Garcia band opposite us, and the bass player sat in with us, and that's the way we passed the night, playing three gigs for two sets.
And then what happened with the group? What was the next big step?
Well, from there, Charlie went with Johnny Chagui. Orlando went to the army, and then I was left with the conjunto, which at the very beginning I just called the Yokihani Orquesta.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought of a name, you know, La Sonora Matancera was my idols.
Mm-hmm.
And Orquesta Aragón. And I decided to call my
name. And that's for our audience, you have to say you're from Cuba. They were
from Cuba. We was one of the best bands, Aragon, which is perfection. You know, if you listen to Aragon, you're going to hear, and La Sonora, of course, you know, which Rogelio, may rest in peace.
What I want to know is, when does it become Conjunto Cachana?
Okay, that's where I was going. My grandfather in Puerto Rico was the people that load and unload ships in Old San Juan.
You were from Puerta de Tierra, where the harbors, where the piers were, the ship.
Right, that's where I was born. I was born
that's
in
right.
Five. So then my grandfather, by love of him, by his fellow workers, used to, instead of calling Quijano, they would call him Cachana.
Oh.
As a nickname then, and you know, loving nickname, like you're my brother kind of thing. And when I made my conjunto, I decided then, like Matancera, I decided to call it El Conjunto Cachana.
Oh, that was good. That was a good inspiration.
Yeah.
It's very
yeah.
catchy. Very catchy.
It was different, you know.
It was different. And when does the Conjunto Cachana make its debut professionally with all the
1957.
Where?
In 56, I went to Cuba. And I picked up a lot of music, which I brought back.
Yes.
From Cuba, una conga, quinto conga, from La Familia Vergara in La Habana.
Uh-huh.
Mario La Maria. I brought back a pair of maracas socata, which I don't know if you ever heard of those.
No,
those are maracas that are sunken in, and the weed are sunken in. And that is made for the sound. It seems that back in the day, maraca singers used to play maracas in front of the microphone, and they found that the chicky 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 of the maraca was too piercing.
Yes.
So one they decided to take the weeda, and sunk it in and put in pieces of rubber. So the maraca player would look like he was playing maracas, of course. You know, it would make a little sound, but the sound was muffed. So like that, you know, it wouldn't cut into the microphone.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I have still here in Puerto Rico, Gilberto Santa Rosa is asking me to get him a pair.
For that, now listen, so you brought that idea and the instrument from Cuba and used it with your group, correct?
Oh, yeah, but Tito Rodriguez used to use it, Machito used to use it, you know, and that was the solution to the treble sound of what makes
because
Cassina
you wanted to give it a certain sound. You needed a certain sound to identify your group, is that correct?
Yes, here's what I did. Since I was fan of Batanzera and Aragon, I combined the two trumpets, the flute of Aragon, the rhythm section playing like charanga, which is, you know, charanga is the violin band with that came out of chamber music. And then they incorporated that sound and three singers singing unison, and that gave me the sound of the conjunto cachana. Here's what happened. When la charanga Aragon came to New York in 1958, there was a dancer, a singer mostly. His name was Bacallao. Bacallao, up in front, and I was there the day they were presented at the Palladium, used to do a step which was very similar to, if you remember all movies of the Indians dancing
the powwow.
Okay, and he had a step similar to that, and then at the same time it was like a Charleston. I remember that.
Uh-huh.
So a combination of those two things, Bacallao used to do a series of steps, and there was a flute player I was playing on that night. He had a band, Pacheco, Johnny Pacheco. And Johnny copied the step, or mimicked the step, brought it to the Bronx, and at the Tritons in the Bronx, which is on Brooklyn Boulevard and next to the Spooner Theater.
It was a club, wasn't it? It was a club.
Right up, it was a club, yeah, the Tritons. Yeah. And he started playing with his charanga there, which was, as I said, you know, a combination of chamber music instruments. And it just happens that Eduardo Davis, in 1959, had written a song called La Pachanga.
Yes.
Now, that number, that name was applied to the dance, and people were, you know, confusing it. Even Tito Rodriguez recorded saying that the dance was, you know, a charanga. No. The charanga was the name of the band, and the pachanga was the name of the hit that Eduardo Davis had.
Please explain, because most people get confused between la charanga and the pachanga. Please explain that to my audience.
Okay, la charanga in French, the word is charangue, G-U-E, and it came from chamber music of the bands that used to play Mozart and all those great composers of the time. But it was a combination, usually, of two violins, the least, two violins, a harpsichord, bass, and, of course, no rhythm.
Eduardo Davidson was the composer of La Pachanga. Who was the one that started to play La Charanga? Johnny Pacheco or Charlie Palmieri? Who was it?
Both at the same time, really. It was Johnny was the flute player with Charlie's band.
And, okay.
Yeah, and then Johnny was approached by Al Santiago, which had Alegre Records in the Bronx. He was on Westchester and Longwood Avenue, and made the recording of El Guiro de Macorina.
Oh, yes, which is a big hit.
It was a huge hit, and people started seeing the step that Pacheco was promoting, which was from Orquesta Aragón, of course, as I said before. And then Charlie made his Orquesta Dubonnet, which was a charanga.
Well, what was happening with you with the pachanga?
Well, I got lucky. I used to work back then for a good one stop, which was a supplier of wholesale records to the industry.
Yes.
All the record stores and the jukeboxes.
Yes.
And I used to handle the Latin department. It was on 9th Avenue and 56th Street. And I had the conjunto already working at a place called Spring Rock Country Club. That was in Spring Valley, New York. And I got the idea to run over to CBS, which was Columbia Records, on 7th Avenue and 52nd Street.
Mm-hmm.
There, I met a wonderful person. His name was Ernie Hutchuller. Which at the same time he was producing Johnny Mathis and Tony Bennett.
Mm.
And here I am, you know, on my lunch hour sitting between Tony Bennett and Johnny Mathis.
Oh, God.
You know, and they liked me, and we started talking, and Tony started mentioning Bossa Nova, which was coming in at the time. We're talking 1960, 61. And then Ernie went up to Spring Rock Country Club, saw the people dancing pachanga, and they were mostly Jewish people at the country club, and the Palladium crowd was mostly American, Jewish, Italian, Irish, you know, German. I mean, you know, there's one good thing about the Palladium where people mingled a lot, you know.
Yes.
And Puerto Ricans and Cubans, of course. And then I was a big hit with Ernie, and he said, come on Monday to the, that was a Saturday, come on Monday to the office and I'll sign you. What? And you know, in top of that, he gave me $1,000.
Wonderful. And that's in those days, that was a lot of money, a lot of money.
That was a lot of money, and I signed with CBS, with Columbia Records.
I'm the only
band that had signed with Columbia and was big at the time was Xavier Coogan.
What year was it?
My signing with Columbia was 60, 61.
And you started to record what? Pachanga?
Well, La Pachanga, yeah, of course. La Pachanga Se Baila Si was written by me, arranged by Charlie Palmieri, and Bobby Valentin, which was a trumpet player with my group at the time. First trumpet, and I wrote Ya Llegó La Pachanga, made a complete album, one side of pachangas, and the other side had danzones, boleros, you know, and the usual Latin songs.
And that was a breakthrough for you. It became such a big hit.
Oh, yeah. You got lucky again, where the merchandising director was a friend of mine, was filmed by my good buddy, Mr. Howard Smith, for CBS. And he marketed the La Pachanga Se Baila Si LP all over the world. And that put me on the map, really.
Did you begin to travel then?
Yeah, well, you know, as the more promotion till today. La Pachanga Se Baila Si in Colombia is like a big number, you know. It opens up mostly all the bodies. Yeah. You know?
Now, you did, then you started with a Pachanga Se Baila Si, and then you had, what happened with Cataño, that which is one of my favorite songs?
I did that just before doing La Pachanga Se Baila Si, where I had Paquito Guzmán was the singer, Willie Torres was the singer, and I, going back to describing my conjunto, as I said, three voices unison, gave me the sound of the conjunto. What's La Lancha Que Voy Pa Cataño was
a big
hit
also. Yes.
Yeah. But for a Spanish label.
Uh-huh, it's another label, okay. But
right.
you also do boleros and other
yes.
genres.
Yes, I did. I started playing just, you know, regular Latin music, you know, bolero, mambo, cha-cha-cha. I copied a lot from you know, mostly Orlando Vallejo, Hiberto Monroy, and then in Puerto Rico, Yo Valle. You know, a lot of copying that I did at the time just to make a repertoire. But
yes.
My big deal was La Pachanga.
That is the biggest, right?
Yeah. At the label, Sesta Records, you know, I kept selling records on my label. But at that time, you sell the records to stores and stuff. Not today. Today's everything is internet, you know.
Yeah.
You can't,
Now, you still feel that you can play, that you want to play? How active are you?
No, I retired in 14 because I had an accident, a motorcycle accident, and that sidelined me, you know, and being a rey de la pachanga, I don't want to go on stage, you know, cogiendo, you know what I mean?
Of course.
Recently, not producing much, but working mostly with my recordings. For example, there's a thing I did about 4 months ago where I released a CD version of How Do You Keep the Music Playing in Spanish, done sung by a lady named Renska Ferrell. She was from Curacao. Yeah. And that is getting a little airplay here in Puerto Rico. But to get airplay lately, you know, it's very difficult. So I've kind of stopped, you know, the production. Well, I really want to thank you for this opportunity to talk to the people out there. I'm 82 years old now. I'll be 83 in September 27th. People want to do the math, they'll know what
but
year.
But you're a happy person. You've had a full life, Joel.
Oh, yeah, no, I really, it's living here. I'm looking forward to selling my place here in case anybody out there is looking for a beachfront. And I'm selling my label, Assessa Records, if anybody's interested.
Okay, they can get in touch with you through me. That's good. That
sure,
sounds good.
Sure.
But listen, I want to thank you and tell you we will be speaking again because your life has so much, and you're a teacher. You're a teacher about music. You're a teacher about the way the genres have evolved, especially salsa. We got to have another show about the salsa history in New York.
Thank you, but mostly thank God. I miss you. I love you. Until always, this is Hilda Miros.